Srimad Bhagavatam, Canto 9, Chapter 5, Devasa Muni's Life Spared. We're beginning with text 21 without any purport. All the blessed women in the heavenly planets will continuously chant about your spotless character at every moment, and the people of this world will also chant your glories continuously. We can read this text. Shishukuvacha evam sankirtya rajanam durvasa paritoshitaha yayo vihaya samantya brahmalokam ahaitukam. Shri Shukavacha. Shri Shukadeva Goswami said, Evam, thus, Sankirtya, glorifying, Rajanam, the king, Durvasa, the great mystic yogi, Durvasa Muni, Paritoshita, being satisfied in all respects. Yayao, left that place. Vihayasa, by the space ways. Amantriya, taking permission. Brahmalokam, to the topmost planet of this universe. I to come where there is no dry philosophical speculation. Translation and purport by His Divine Grace A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Srila Prabhupada. Sri Shukadeva Goswami continued, thus, being satisfied in all respects, the great mystic yogi Durvasa took permission and left, continuously glorifying the king through the spaceways, through the skyways. He went to Brahmaloka, which is devoid of agonistics and dry philosophical speculators. Agnostics. Devoid of agnostics and dry philosophical speculators. Purport. Although Durvasa Muni went back to Brahmaloka through the spaceways, he did not need an airplane, for the great mystic yogis can transport themselves from any planet to any other without any machine. There is a planet named Siddhaloka whose inhabitants can go to any other planet, because they naturally have all the perfection of yoga practice. Thus, Durvasa Muni, the great mystic yogi, could go through the skyways to any planet, even to Brahmaloka. In Brahmaloka, everyone is self-realized, and thus there is no need of philosophical speculation to come to the conclusion of the Absolute Truth. Durvasa Muni's purpose in going to Brahmaloka was apparently to speak to the residents of Brahmaloka about how powerful a devotee is and how a devotee can surpass every living entity within this material world. The so-called jnanis and yogis cannot compare to a devotee. Translation. Durvasa Muni had left the place of Maharaj Ambarisha, and as long as he had not returned for one complete year, the king had fasted, maintaining himself simply by drinking water. After 1 year, when Durvasa Muni had returned, King Ambarisha sumptuously fed him all varieties of pure food, then he himself also ate. When the king saw that the brahmana Durvasa Muni had been released from the great danger and being burned, he could understand that by the grace of the Lord, he himself was also powerful, but he did not take any credit, for everything had been done by the Lord. purported devotee like Ambarisha is certainly always busy in many activities. Of course, this material world is full of danger that one has to meet. But a devotee, because of his full dependence on the Supreme Personality of Godhead, is never disturbed. The vivid example is Maharaj Ambarisha. He was the emperor of the entire world and had many duties to perform. And the cause of these duties, there are many disturbances created by persons like Durvasa Muni. For the king tolerated everything, patiently depending fully on the mercy of the Lord. The Lord, however, is situated in everyone's heart. Sarvasya cha ham riddhi sanavishtaha. And he manages things as he desires. Thus, although Maharaj Ambarisha was faced with many disturbances, the Lord, being merciful to him, managed things so nicely that in the end, Durvasa Muni and Ambarisha, Maharaj Ambarisha, became great friends and parted cordially on the basis of bhakti yoga. After all, Durvasa Muni was convinced of the power of bhakti yoga, although he himself was a great mystic yogi. Therefore, as stated by the Lord Krishna in Bhagavad Gita, yoginam api sarvesham madgate nantaratmana shravan bhajate omam sumeyuktatamo mataha. Of all yogis, he who always abides in me with great faith, worshipping me in transcendent loving service, is most intimately united with me in yoga and is the highest of all. Thus, it is a fact that a devotee is the topmost yogi, as proved by, in the dealings of Maharaj Ambarisha with Durvasa Muni. As stated in the Bhagavad Gita, Yanisha sarvabhutanam tasyam jagrati samyami yasyam jagrati bhutani sanisha pashuto mune. That what is night for all sentient beings. Ya nisha sarvabhutanam. So nisha means night. Is a time in awakening for the self-control. Ya nisha sarvabhutani yasyam jagrati bhutani. Ya nisha sarvabhutani. I think that's where it starts. Yanisha sarvabhutani tasyam jagrati samyami. So samyami means the samyami. Sam means complete. And yami means the control. So the self-control. So yanisha sarvabhutani, what is night, nisha for all sentient beings, tasyam jagrati. Jagrati means to wake up, like jeev jago, Gaurachandra. Bole! Kota Nidra Yaumaya. Wake up, sleeping soul. So, Jeev Dago. So here it's Yanisha Sarvabhutanam Tasyam Jagrati Bhutani. So from what is night for all sentient beings is the time awakening for the self-control. And Yasyam Jagrati Bhutani, what is awakening for all sentient beings, yasyam jagrati sani sha pashuto mune, is the night for the introspective sage. So generally speaking, in this material world, everyone wants to get something. No one came to the material world, or very few of us come to the material world, to take part in Krishna's pastimes. Everyone comes here to get something from the material world. And therefore, when one gets what one wants, one is thinking one is making progress. And if one doesn't get what one wants, then one thinks one is defeated. And we have to get something from someone usually, so in that regard, if someone has something we want, we have to get it from them, and may not want to give it to us, and therefore they become our enemy. And sometimes someone wants to give us something, what we want, and they become our friends. So this material world is on the basis of what people are giving me and what they're taking away from me, either friends or enemies. So if someone gives me something, they're my friend. And if they take away something I want, they're my enemy. And if my enemy gives me something I want, they become my friend. If my friend takes away something I want, then they become my enemy. So friendship and enemy is just a mental concoction. Because we think we're gaining something, but the fact is, nothing happens without Krishna's desire. And Krishna happens to be the controller of everything. Now, if you don't believe Krishna is the controller of everything, which is why we're in the material world in the first place, because we don't believe that, and that's why we stay here, because we may superficially accept it sometimes, and then we forget about it. Oh, yes, Krishna. I'll give you 5 minutes of control, and then I'm back. And we're back for the competition. But the fact is that without Krishna giving us remembrance, we can't remember anything. And without Krishna giving us forgetfulness, we can't forget anything. Just like sometimes we're trying to remember something, and we can't remember it. And then we forget about it, and then Krishna lets us remember it. When we give up trying to force our remembrance and surrender to Krishna, then Krishna gives us remembrance. And sometimes we're trying to forget something, and we can't forget it. The more we try and forget it, the more we remember it. So if we were actually in control of our remembrance and our forgetfulness, why don't we remember whatever we want and forget whatever we want? We can't do that. Not only that, but at least the devotees should know we don't even have control over our knowledge. Real knowledge is that I'm not this body, and sometimes we might get a glimpse of it, of our identity as an eternal soul. And then we forget it immediately. We forget it. We're back into the material concept of life. We're back in ignorance. We think by gaining some superficial knowledge about something about how this earth, water, fire, air, mind, intelligence, and false ego is combining in different combinations, we think that's knowledge. But it's just a different phase of ignorance. It may be something called knowledge, but it's material knowledge, but it's not real knowledge. Unless we understand how the material world is simply a combination of the different energies of Krishna, which make one form one moment, just like we're in this form. But when we leave this body, and the body deteriorates, and it's all that's left is bones, and someone comes along and says, Bhaktin or Bhakta so-and-so, you look a little thin. Well, that's because I can't eat. I'm dead. Oh, I'm sorry. Just a skeleton. We look at our body and think, oh, how magnificent. But when we see, if we could actually see the body as it is, there's a skeleton, there's muscles, there's fat, there's so many different things, we wouldn't be so much enamored with it. But due to ignorance, we actually believe that this is some kind of wonderful creation worthy of my love and adoration and service. So that's called ignorance. Although we may know how many bones we have in our body, but what's the difference? Because we're not the body anyhow. How many of us are actually interested in finding out how an engine in an automobile works? Anyone here really intensely interested in finding out how an automobile engine works? Is anyone here enamored with an automobile that the first thing you wake up in the morning is you embrace it? My dear automobile, I love you. And that when I find out how you work, then I'll be enlightened. So I can control you better. But somehow or another, we become enamored with this material concept of life, and we think, if we can figure out how another person works to control them better, then I'm making progress. But we're not even controlling the person, we're just controlling this material energy. How many people are really interested in getting a bag of air, or water, or fire, or ether, and figuring out how to control it. So it's just misconception that we're trying to control something which ultimately doesn't really have that much to do with ourselves, except for the fact that we're entangled in this material nature now. So that's called being awake, to understand that. And when we're not awake, we're simply asleep. We may have different degrees of sleeping, but we're more or less, if we don't realize we're already asleep, then we'll never wake up. If you're dreaming, you think you're awake, it's very hard to wake up. And if you're awake, and you don't know you're actually also sleeping, then why would you bother trying to wake up? And that doesn't mean that only a devotee realizes he should wake up. We realize we should wake up, and then we go back to sleep again. So Durvasa Muni was asleep. Although he was a very powerful yogi, he can manipulate this earth, water, fire, air, ether, mind, intelligence, and false ego better than we can. And therefore, we offer him all respects, and to the inhabitants of Brahmaloka, who are more self-realized than we are, as it says in this verse. But ultimately, it's all being arranged by Krishna, according to our desire and our karma. And therefore, the actual aim is to become friendly to all living entities, to actually try to relate to the soul rather than just to the body. It's not that we ignore the body, but we should relate to the body in relation to the soul and not the soul in relation to the body. Everyone in the material world thinks, all right, you might be a soul, but actually more important than you is your body. I'm interested in your body. I'm not interested in you. According to the philosophy, you're only 1/10,000th the size of Tip Aaron's size. Why would I want to control you? But your body, if I can control that, then I've actually, I'm doing something. Although I can't even control my own body. I can't control one atom in my body, which is always changing. I can't even say, stop for a moment. Please don't change, my dear atom. Let me control something in this world. But the atom's not going to listen to us. It keeps on changing anyhow. So we can't control one atom in our body. How are we going to control anyone else? But we have this illusion, I can become the controller, I can become the enjoyer, I can do better than Krishna is doing. Krishna just doesn't know. It's probably Chaturmasya and he's asleep. But I can see things as they are, and I know how things should be. And therefore, I don't ask Krishna what he wants me to do, or how he wants me to see things, or how he wants me to feel. It's all coming like from me. The way I think, the way I feel, the way I want to do things, that's really the truth. And Krishna should accept it. But the fact is, Krishna wants us to see everyone, Vidya Vanaya Sampane, Brahmani Gavi Hastini, Shuni Chaiva Swapake Cha, Pandita Samadarshana. He wants to see us, all living entities, whether it be a Brahmin or a cow, a dog, or a dog eater, he wants us to see all living entities as spiritual beings, as the same as we are. And our goal should be to see like that. Now we can't get the tiger, or even the cow, or the dog, or the dog eater to see like that. But we can learn how to see like that. And what's the secret? Learning to be tolerant, first of all, like Ambarish Maharaj. Durvasa Muni was trying to kill him, but Durvasa Muni didn't think he was trying to kill me because he didn't think he was the body. He just consulted with Krishna. He started to meditate upon Krishna. What should I do under these circumstances? And Krishna, he appeared within Ambarish Maharaj's heart, and Ambarish was in ecstasy. That's what he should have done, is to turn to Krishna in these circumstances. And the result is he was in ecstasy, immersed in love of God. So is there anything better to do? Should he have said, stop, Krishna, give me some weapon, I'll kill this demon myself. And then I'll get back to meditating on you. No, Ambarish showed that he was always meditating upon Krishna, always depending upon Krishna. And therefore, although it appeared that Durvasa Muni was trying to kill him, but actually the reality, Durvasa Muni was trying to kill him. But Durvasa Muni was acting as an instrument for Krishna to show Ambarish Maharaj his glory. From Krishna's point of view, it was all arranged to magnify Ambarish Maharaj's glory and to give him an opportunity to meditate even more intensely upon Krishna and therefore experience even greater happiness and ecstasy. And because Ambarish Maharaj was in harmony with Krishna's desire, therefore that's what he got from the whole incident, more ecstasy, more love of God, more dependence on Krishna. And the result is, when Durvasa Muni saw that, he learned, and when Krishna was pursuing him with his Sudarshan Chakra, Durvasa Muni came to the same level as Ambarish Maharaj and surrendered to Krishna and appreciated, because of his appreciation of a pure devotee like Ambarish Maharaj, therefore he understood that the real goal of life was to meditate upon Krishna and love and meditate upon Krishna's devotees in love, and therefore avoid all the problems of the material existence. So Durvasa Muni is trying to show his mystic power and kill Ambarish, and Ambarish's tolerance and rely upon Krishna. At the end, Ambarish Maharaj won, and Durvasa Muni also gained victory by glorifying and appreciating that higher than my mystic power is pure devotion to Krishna. That's the ultimate goal. And therefore he even went to Brahmaloka to glorify Ambarish Maharaj. Although it says all the inhabitants of Brahmaloka were self-realized, but they didn't understand the glories of Ambarish Maharaj and a devotee. So Durvasa Muni became the devotee of his devotee, and therefore he wanted to glorify Ambarish and enlighten the residents of Brahmaloka. Because Durvasa Muni, he fled from the Sudarshan Chakra, he went to Brahmaloka, he went to Kailash, he went all over the universe, but no one would give him any protection. No one would tell him to go and surrender to Ambarish Maharaj, except for Lord Vishnu. And therefore they're all in ignorance. Brahma was in ignorance, all the demigods were in ignorance, only Lord Vishnu was in ignorance. And he gave him the real purport of the whole incident. Go and surrender to Ambarish Maharaj, and then you'll actually get real enlightenment, and you'll get real protection, and you'll get real advancement. And that's what he did. So the whole universe is full of ignorant people. We're all trying to protect this body or gain something for this body and forgetting about Krishna. Not relying upon Krishna. It's not that we don't try to protect the body, that a tiger is coming to bite us, and we think, I'll just rely upon Krishna, because we're not so advanced. Always saying, Krishna, Krishna, where are you? You know, why aren't you coming? I'll give you 3 seconds, then I run. 1, 2, 3. I'm off. Ah! Too late. Just like Draupadi, she was being disrobed in the front of the Kauravas, very embarrassing for such a cultured lady as her, Draupadi. And she had one hand on her sari when she was trying to be disrobed by Duryodhana's friend, Dushasana, powerful warrior. Draupadi was trying to hold on. She was also powerful, but not as powerful as Dushasana. One hand in the air, Krishna, save me, save me. Oh, wow, save. And then she realizes, I'm not going to be, you know, this is not good. I choose either or So she chose, help! And then Krishna came and helped her. So we're kind of like that also. Yes, Krishna is God. I should say, help, Hare Krishna. I got my bank balance, I got my friends, I got my yoga exercise, I got my diet, I got my pills. Krishna! So we have to put up our hands. Krishna help, and then Krishna will actually... We actually have the mood. Now, Krishna help. Then Krishna will actually come and help us. And that will be the perfect mood. Because that's the relationship. And even Krishna has that mood. He depends upon his devotee. And when the devotee reciprocates and depends upon Krishna, then one's life becomes perfect. So I'll stop there. Thank you. Any questions?
Why we forget Krishna and why we forget relationship with Krishna?
Well, the ultimate reason is that we want to be Krishna. Now, of course, most of us don't want to have a flute or have become black or have a peacock feather in our hand. But the basic quality that Krishna has is that he controls things in this world. Controls everything. So we can't control everything, but we like to control something. And we can't control our wife or our husband or our children, then we get a little dog. We try and control him. Jump, jump. You want to eat? Jump. But we can't, the dog doesn't listen to us, we get a parakeet. If the parakeet doesn't listen to us, we get a fish. And we imagine this, we're controlling it to the left. To the right. So we want to control things. We want to control something. We want to feel like we're actually in control of something. And we want to enjoy. We want to control something that we can enjoy. Just like we cook the carrot, put it in our plate, it offers us full respect, it's bowing down before us, ready to be sacrificed into our fire of digestion and become one with us. Enter into us and empower us to eat more cauliflower, potatoes, and carrots in the future. So we want to control things because we want to enjoy them. We want to enjoy our feeling of control, and the things that we can control, we want to enjoy. So that's why, that's that feeling, we want to get it. Now this body, we take as God. Although we're not the body, but we take it as God. And when it's controlling things, we take it that our God is controlling things on behalf of us. That we're controlling God, this body, and this God body is controlling things. So then we feel like we're actually in control and enjoying things through this body. That way we forget Krishna, because ultimately it's all illusion, so Maya has to provide us with this playground, just like a little child, she's 7 years old or 5 years old, and her parents give her a little plastic kitchen. Her parents don't give her the whole kitchen, she just give her a little plastic kitchen with little plastic pots and plastic bread, and she's thinking she's cooking. She's not cooking. If she offers you a plastic piece of bread, will you eat it? No, she's imagining she's cooking, but she believes she's cooking. And she has a stove, she has the bread, she has everything to prove it. But it's just imagination. So we're just imagining that we're something we're not. We're imagining that we're in some position we're not. Well, actually, we're simply the 1/10,000th size of Tipiharan size, completely depending on Krishna. But Maya gives us the illusion that we're something other than that. That's called the material existence. Why? Because that's what we want. Why do people go to the movies and watch Tarzan and Jane or James Bond and his girlfriend? Why do they go there? Because they want to imagine there's something they're not. They want to enjoy that imagination for a little while. So we have our imagination during the day, and our main imagination is we think we're this body and we're this mind. or our feelings or so many things. And we want to experience them and enjoy them. Does that make sense? Anything else? Yes.
Thank you, Guru Maharaj. I want to ask, you said that when you mentioned Jiv Jago, about
Jiv Jago.
That we have these sparkles of, I don't know, awakens or conscious, or, but how can we maintain this stage? I noticed when I am tired, it's very difficult to maintain this stage.
Well, if you're tired, go to sleep.
As a temple devotee.
Try to think about Krishna before you go to sleep. Maybe you'll think a little bit about him when you're asleep. That's all. But why should you want to maintain? If you're tired, best thing to do is to take rest. That's why you're tired, so you can rest the body. Especially if it's at night. I mean, if it's during the day and it's not necessary. But anyhow, tired, because then our service is to go to sleep. As if we think, well, if I go to sleep, I'll forget Krishna. Well, we should serve Krishna by going to sleep for him, and then maybe we'll think about him when we're asleep.
Thank you.
Mataji Raga Manjari called me yesterday. She has a question for you. She's asking that if we buy clothing in second-hand shop, do we share karma from the previous owner? Or if we go to the toilet and then we all use the same slippers in the toilet, in bathroom, do we share karma by wearing the same slippers?
Yeah, you share. Well, if you have the same slippers, at least you have... You share karma, at least everyone has a slipper. That way you're sharing the karma, because Krishna has provided a slipper equally for all of you. As far as touching the devotee, a devotee has a slipper in the bathroom and you put on the shoes. Well, if you start thinking how disgusting this is, this someone else stepped on it, another devotee stepped on it, you're definitely getting karma, bad karma, by such a negative thought about a devotee. Generally, the devotees, just like there was one devotee named Kaliya Krishnadas, he went all around Bengal trying to get the dust of the lotus feet of the devotees, or get their remnants, or the water that washed their feet. And therefore, Chaitanya Mahaprabhu gave him all mercy. So if we're thinking, you know, these dirty slippers, another devotee touched them, how can my lotus-like foot touch it? We have the wrong attitude. And if you're really into that, if that's your thought, then pick up the shoe and wash it before you put it on, if we're so particular. For a more advanced devotee, he's looking for the dust of the feet of the devotees. But anyhow, we may not be so advanced, and maybe the shoe isn't so clean, so pick it up and wash it before you use it. As far as clothes go, I think if you wash the clothes, it should be all right.
Yeah.
I mean, everything we do, we're getting karma if we're not in Krishna consciousness. And if we're in Krishna consciousness, why do we worry about the karma? That's up to Krishna. Arjuna, we could ask, when Arjuna took an arrow and shot people through the head and through the heart, was he getting any karma? After all, you know, you'd wonder about such an activity. What kind of karma? But Krishna said, even you get the karma, but I'm in control. If you do it for me, then you'll become Krishna conscious while you're doing it. And we miss out on Krishna consciousness, whatever we're doing, we're going to get karma. We may get karma anyhow, even if we're trying to become Krishna conscious, but at least we're trying to become Krishna conscious. For ordinary activities, then Krishna will give us the intelligence if it's necessary. And if it's not necessary, you know, just like if you get some clothing, and it's clear that you should utilize it, although it wasn't first touched by you. Still, you know, what was touched by you? Did you touch the plant that was made to make the the cloth? Did you weave the cloth? Did you sell the cloth? What about all these other people that are involved? If you're so worried about their vibration. Better to go around naked. That way you won't get it. But then again, you'll probably get a little karma for doing that too. So how can you avoid it? Well, we should try and become Krishna conscious. And then even if there is some negative karma or vibration or whatever, then we won't be affected by it.
We have a question from internet audience, Bhakti Yoga Tilburg. Hare Krishna Maharaj, thank you for the class. Question, in the case of Drupadi, shouldn't we also do our part in defending ourselves and our loved ones, like you said with the tiger?
Yeah, I mean, Draupadi realized the only way I'm going to be saved is if I completely depend upon Krishna. Now, if a 5-year-old child was trying to rip Draupadi's cloth off, she probably could protect herself. But that wasn't the situation. She had to use her intelligence and see, without Krishna protecting me, it's not going to work. Therefore, she fully surrendered to Krishna. She had no alternative. So in different circumstances, we may do different things. That depends upon Krishna, the intelligence he gives us. Now, if there were a 5-year-old child and came along and pulled on Draupadi's cloth, and she threw up her hands, Krishna, save me, it would have been inappropriate. Because she could have, why is she bothering? She could have easily just told the 5-year-old child to go away. Why make such a hysterical thing about being saved when she could have just, Krishna would have given her the intelligence, hold on to the cloth, there's no problem. So we have to rely upon Krishna what to do. Then it's appropriate.
Thank you.
Anything else? Yes. Oh, wait. We have our microphone here.
Hare Krishna Maharaj. Thank you very much for your nice class. And I want to ask you about, in the beginning of the class, you told that in material consciousness, if we are giving something and we have this, you know, that we are giving because we want to get something back. But in the nectar of instruction, it said that we should also, this in one of the verses.
Dadati prati grinati.
Yeah, dati.
Yeah, well, that's for the devotees.
And what kind of mood we have to develop to do that?
We're doing it to please Krishna. And to please Krishna, we please his devotee. And Krishna wants us to give this thing to this devotee, so we give this thing to the devotee because Krishna wants it. And his devotees want it, and I want it because they want it. I want to please Krishna, I want to please his devotees, so that's why I do it. Now, a materialist never thinks like that. Therefore, it's material. They want something back for it. Or they want to get rid of something that they don't need, like a blind cow. Someone has a blind cow, it's a botheration, so they say, let's give it to the temple. I can give it to the temple, the blind cow, I'll get rid of it, and maybe I'll get some pious credit for it too at the same time. So it's all material calculation in terms of one's personal or extended gain and loss. Is that right?
Thank you, Maharaj.
Kala Grantaraj Shrimad Bhagavatam Ki Jai.